Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
The stars. We have all the stars.
They're not really simple things. They're just pretty amazing.
I reckon it's the most enticing culture that you could ever learn.
Having a yarn. Good to have a yarn. And I like talking, so.
This is Outback Out Loud, Cobar.
Check out these stories from our community.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
Hi again. I've just finished playing golf and I pop in here to the golf club as I'm a member quite often. Well, it's an interest. When you live on your own, you don't see anyone much unless you go and mix with people. By coming down here, I've met a lot of friends and everything like that.
The only thing I can tell you, ladies, is why I live here is because of the people.
Well, I've been playing golf since I was 32. I was a late comer.
All I can tell them is it's the most friendliest town I've ever lived in.
Well, I met Alma because we travel around a lot for golf, lady golfers. And many, many, many years ago, when Alma lived in Ivanhoe, and we used to go to Ivanhoe to play golf, that's where I first met Alma. And I would have only been 30-some then.
And then when we sold our property and came over here, when I moved to Cobar, Tuesday, I moved in, and I moved in when I knew Faye and quite a few others. So we moved into playing golf, and that's my company.
Well, at least 93 still playing golf.
I'm still trying, but I'm not very successful in my life.
Don't worry, love, if I can swing a golf stick as good as you at 93, I'll be happy. And I tried to get everybody to come and have a game of golf when I was in my 30s. No, we're not old enough yet to play golf. They're all playing golf now. And they all gave up squash.
It was such a hard job playing squash, wasn't it?
You can pick Glenda's brains now. She's been here as long as
as long. But you know, Cobar people look after one another. They're very good at that. You know, if someone's sick or whatever, we have big benefit
got the
mural nights.
Chest for that.
Yeah, but we have benefit nights, you know, where we get all the musos together.
Some of our benefit
together.
Nights would put Sydney in the shade.
Yeah, you should have been here Saturday night.
Saturday night's event.
They had a limp sync contest.
Which is a mining.
Yeah, for the netball. It was packed.
12,000 in the paper.
Oh, is it?
People, golf, friends.
And
golf as you get older.
Well, we're this way that this is our golf family. We're a family.
Exactly, yes.
That's exactly how you could call us. We're a family.
But wherever you go, if you go to Brewarrina, Balnoa, Ningen, Cobar, Warren, Canamble, Burke.
Well, they love Cobar. We're very social.
Here's Lillian and Elizabeth interviewing each other about their lives so far.
We came out here, my late husband and I, to manage that Copper City Motel for 3 months.
And you're still here.
Well, that job finished, took 2 years to sell the motel. So we had sold up most of our big belongings in Tamworth, put our stuff in and decided that we would hit the road and be gypsies because my late husband was descended from the gypsies. Just be gypsies and go wherever the wind took us was what we tell people. Before we had left Tamworth, my late husband had a knee arthroscopy and was told he'd have to have a knee replacement. He said, well, it won't happen. But the knee came against him, both in Forbes and in Moree. So we came back here, settled down for a while he got his knee fixed. Then we went back on the road and we went to Charleville in Queensland. We also went to Roma in Queensland, stints there. Then we were called to go to Burke. You know, some fellow who'd asked us a long time, you know, if I bought a motel, would you manage it for me? And so we got a call and he said, yeah, we'll come to Burke. So we went to Burke for 2 years. Then we came back here and stopped. And when you stop, things catch up with you. and we were both diagnosed with cancer. You know, did all things. I was very early diagnosed with breast cancer. That was dealt with, yeah, pretty well. Minimal treatment, yeah, ray treatment, but minimal. But Roy had prostate cancer, and it was already escaped by the time they found it. So his was not, yeah, not a good diagnosis. But we'd sought treatment, and he had treatment which kept him going for quite a few years. Year or so down the track, after we sort of was dealing with these sorts of things, Roy was still undergoing different treatments. I contracted leukemia. In the midst of all this, we're sort of doing all sorts of things and having tests and whatever. I ended up now for 9 months in and out of RPA Hospital in Sydney. I went in 3 weeks on, then we'd come home for a month or so. Managed to go to Thailand in between, did all sorts of stuff, and came out of it at the end of 9 months cured, which, you know, I'm now 5 years cured. So, you know, Roy had all his usual prostate stuff that he followed up with, hormone treatment. You know, it started losing its efficiency. So they suggested that Roy have some chemotherapy. And with my experience of chemo, I came through chemo very well. I didn't lose my hair. I started to and it stopped. Didn't lose my hair. I didn't get sick. I was lucky. I'd, you know, be going out for drinkies on the weekends and wandering the hospital doing all sorts of things. Given that experience, yeah, go for it. Chemo is going to be the thing that will keep you going for a bit longer. Yeah, unfortunately, it wasn't to be. Chemo totally wrecked him. So, after about 3 chemo treatments, we were back for 4, and we lost Roy. We didn't bring him home. As we came back from, like, these treatments and things like that, Cobar wrapped itself around us, and there was always somebody there. If you needed something, or there was somebody there, and it's that, you know, the glue that holds you.
So what's one of the best things that you've done in Cobar? Best memories about Cobar?
I think probably the Grey Mardi Gras.
Mm.
Because we got up on a float and made fools of ourselves going down the street.
You
I have had my ex-husband over here visiting. He's been wonderful since I lost Roy. And he was over here and he told people that I embarrassed him all the way up the street and down the street, and because it was sort of like make love, not war, and things like that. But, yeah, that's probably one of the funnest things, I suppose, that I've done.
Grey Mardi Gras was lots of fun.
It was. It was just so much fun.
I can't wait until we can do it again.
Oh, me too. What brought you to Cobar, Liz?
We moved to Cobar in 1982 when I was 6 years old for the opening of Allura.
Right.
For mining. Yep. So my dad was had got employed by Allura, and he was the head storeman. Then in 1990, when I was in high school, Dad got retrenched from Allura. Yeah. That was when it closed the first time. But then I was in year 9. Dad had to find other work, but Mum stayed with us. I'm a twin. And Dad ended up over in Kalgoorlie working for Sandvik. Yeah. But we stayed here, and he came home when he could, which wasn't very often.
Yeah.
And then he sort of did different jobs. But I've stayed here ever since. I've trained as a teacher, and now I've done more training as a teacher librarian, and I work at the local public school, and I've been there since 1998, and I've married a local and I'm not going anywhere. I love the red dirt, and I love, you know, we've been through this terrible drought, and I was always trying. It was devastating. I didn't deal with it every day. Craig, my husband, did, obviously, and Diane and Richard, but there's still beauty in it, even in the devastation of drought. Yeah. There is still beauty in the landscape, and I love that.
Yeah. My name is Leonie McCosker. I work at the Cobar Weekly office, but I'm also an ex-local. So I grew up here, my family are still here. And I recently just moved back. I lived in Townsville for 12 years. I'm from local Indigenous family. My late grandfather was the elder of this town before he passed away. So we still have quite a number of family members in this town. Most of them, actually, my mum's still here. My dad sadly passed away unexpectedly in September. And that was part of the reason I moved back, because I'd been away for so long. And, you know, my brother's here and my niece and nephew. And, yeah, so I love Cobar, so I'm back now. We used to have a park up the road from where I lived, so they actually used to call that the hood where I lived, which was, it was always fun growing up there. You know, we go out till, you know, when the lights come on, that's when you come home, sort of thing, and very community orientated. I do remember, you know, running along the road in summertime and the tar melting on our feet, and, you know, we'd have to pick it off before we went inside and things like that, you know, because it gets so hot here in summertime, and they'd have to, you know, bus us all to school even though we were sort of close. And yeah, so summertime's growing up was always fun. And then teenage years, you know, sneaking into the open cut, swimming in there, and the girls with blonde hair going green and and all that, used to heal all our sores and cuts and stuff, and so probably from all the minerals in the water. But yeah, just lots of things like that. Now I'm climbing. We used to climb, go out the road and climb what we called it, the pinky and the limey, and probably things that we shouldn't be on, you know. These days they'd be all cordoned off and stuff, so it was always fun growing up. Mum and her family had to live out, it used to be called Wrightsville, which is out of town, so we're sort of during the times when, you know, the town was segregated, I guess, a bit. So, you know, the Aboriginal people lived out the road, and also the local Italian families, they all lived out there as well. But, you know, they always had fun growing up doing similar things to us, and yeah, so it's always good stories. You know, we used to walk out the scrub, and we always knew where there were mine shafts and things like that. And, you know, parents either, I mean, I wouldn't let my son probably wander out the common, but, you know, we used to build cubbies out there, go and find the dugout holes and build cubbies, and, you know, climb all over the, or go climb up the silver tank, you know. So you wouldn't do that these days, I guess. So yeah, we had a lot more freedom, I guess. And well, out the common now, they've got all them signs up saying asbestos and can't go out there. That was our playground, you know. So yeah, things have changed dramatically these days. I also think it's not good health wise for what, you know, what's in the air and stuff like that. I know there's cancer clusters and stuff in mining towns, and I think it's got something to do with the lead and, you know, and whatever else is floating around. But I guess it's something that we have to embrace, because it helps small communities like ours.
What do you love about Cobar?
What I love about Cobar? Probably the people, mainly. The community spirit, I guess. People look out for each other, I think, here. And since I've come back, you know, just seeing people, and everyone's welcomed me back so much and saying how happy they are to see me. So that's also a good thing. I was missed, which is really kind of weird because I was away for so long. And yeah, so single mum, 1 9-year-old boy, and yeah, life's good at the moment.
Yeah. I'm Annie van der Westhuizen. First was from South Africa to 13 years ago. To Perth, and from Perth to Cobar Outback Town. Yeah, so when we move here to the mines, my partner get a work at mine, so we open first the one and then the second one, and then after 2 years we open the next one, and get that shop as well, and do like a homeware and little more things there. Yeah, so it's 4 years now, and then we start with the Lucky Dip. That more like where all the dollar shops and more like reject shops, same with the suppliers and things like that. So, and he's doing good. So yeah, and we got the news agency as well in town. Yeah, great things from the news agency. You know, we with everything in green, and we're really proud of that place. We was a little bit scared in the beginning, so we start on the 1st of December there. and got the building as well. So we're going to plan a lot of things there as well to renovate and upgrade the building and do more. Yeah. In the beginning was really hard for me, you know, but I grew up in the little towns in South Africa, like mining towns. So, yeah, used to, you know, do your own thing and make something out of nothing, you know. Yeah, that's me. Oh, that was a really shock, because when I was, when my husband said, all right, he's coming for an interview to Koba News, I was Google, and maybe Google wrong, and there's a mall and everything. And I said, all right, that sounds good. We stay over in Dabo, and from Dabo they rent a car for us. So that was the ongoing 3 hours. That was really, really a shock. And if people come in when we open the shop, they say, oh, we was planning for 2 years in Cobar, but we are now 10 years here. We bought a house. And when they go out, I say to my husband, can you be so crazy? Now we're 4 years here. We bought a house. We renovated our house. So, yeah, that's the thing, you know. And people are lovely people, and they support me. So, you know, and in us and the shops and the people. So, yeah, we are here to stay, and we plan something else. So, yeah, we got a lot of things in store for Koba, yeah.
I'm Rick Olson. I'm from the local community, the Aboriginal community, that's the Nyampa tribe. I'm a descendant from there, and I've lived and worked around here for a number of years, and I've moved on and I've came back, and my family has lived here, and I've come back to visit them. To grow up on a property, it's a freedom thing. You haven't got to worry about the stress and the hassle and, you know, to what people have got now with the laws and things like that. We were from a really horsey family, and we used to ride horses. It wasn't motorbikes back then, and make your own farm. Family had to move over this way for school reasons, because my father was a working manager on properties on station, yeah, and Mum was schooling five of us with correspondence, so that was a big job. So we moved from the property not far out of town into town here. I was at the public school, which is only just over the hill there, and I ended up went through there. I think I started off in third class from memory, and then I ended up going to the high school here, and I done the first year, which was year seven, and then I had to leave because I had to help support the family, because my father ended up pretty ill. So I was basically taken out of school to help him. We were shoot rabbits, shoot kangaroos, and then ended up, like, my father had a kangaroo license for that, and as things progressed, I ended up getting my own kangaroo license. So we just sort of supported the family like that over the years. When I first started with National Parks and Wildlife, I had to shoot the kangaroos to make a living, and the feral pigs, which weren't protected, but all those other things that were, I used to shoot those to make the living on it. Yeah, so I did have that little sea change, and my bosses respected that with me, because they had some, on different properties, parks I worked on, they had troublesome neighbours that hated National Parks and Wildlife, so they used to get me to go and do the little talk to them. Yeah, it was good. It was good, because I'd been on both sides. See, I was culling the animals to make a living, and now I got. Then I was back on the protecting them. So yeah.
This is the multi-talented Susan talking about chainsaws and cake decorating.
I was born in Katoomba because my grandmother had a house down there, and in those days it probably wasn't very safe to have a baby in the outback, so she went to Katoomba and stayed with my grandmother, and I was born about, I think, 4 weeks early, and I was about 4 pounds. I was really tiny, and I'm still tiny. We grew up on a farm in the outback. We're in, if there was a triangle between Cockburn, Bourke and Louth, our property was pretty much in the middle of that triangle, and then later we acquired a property on the Darling River, upriver from Louth. And so we had two properties to go between to work on. So we did as children, we did distance education. We had no opportunity to go to school until I was 15, I think, when I was first in a school in town, when my mother decided that I probably should be in the town so I could complete my HSC. It was approximately a 3-hour trip to go to town, so our mailman took approximately the same amount of time to come to our place, and he always had a cup of tea, and we were always excited to get our distance education in the mail, and there was this brown envelope turned up, and our lessons were there, and I could read, so I could basically teach myself. Mum said she never really had to sit down and read the supervisor's notes, because I learnt to read really young, so I always taught myself, and I can always remember that I was an avid reader, so I just taught myself. And then I was helping my younger siblings with their lessons, because with seven children, Mum had her hands full. We're doing fencing. I could use a chainsaw. By the time I was 12, I was cutting scrub, helping my dad in the droughts for sheep. We didn't get paid, but it was a job. And anything from just daily chores you did around, you know, if your parents, you just helped. And I didn't mind. I think it was actually a wonderful way to grow up out on a farm. I actually went to school in Cobar, and then my first job then was I used to babysit for the bank manager. Our bank manager had children, I used to look after them, because he always said country kids were more responsible. And then after that I went to university at Armidale, because it was a nice country uni. I love entering competitions with my art and cake decorating. I've really got into that now. A Royal Easter and the cakes in the cake decorating competitions, like the National Cake Decorating Competition. I like the big ones because it challenges. Be inspired by your surroundings and nature. Take inspiration from what you see around you, and you'll come up with something unique every time.
Thanks for listening to Outback Out Loud. We'll see you in Cobar.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history. Please like, subscribe, rate us, and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. Over 100 recordings were made. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.